Welcome to ID the Future. This is Sarah Chaffee. Today we have on the show with us Dr. Anne Gager, who holds a PhD in zoology from the University of Washington and completed a postdoctoral fellowship at Harvard. She is a senior fellow of the Center for Science and Culture and serves as a scientist at Biologic Institute, as well as director of science communications at the Center for Science and Culture. She joins us today to share about a central argument used by evolutionary biologists to say that it's easy to get new proteins. Dr. Gager, thank you for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
So, why do we care if it's easy to get new proteins?
Well, one of the central arguments that's in Steve Meyer's book is that the origin of biological information is very difficult to account for. And therefore, we propose that in order to get new information, you need intelligent design. Doug Axe has done work where he looked at how hard it is to get new functional information, new functional proteins, by a purely random process, and discovered that the odds of getting a new functional protein fold is on the order of 1 in 10 to the 77th power. So that's extremely, extremely rare, beyond the reach of natural processes, beyond the reach of all organisms that have ever lived over all of the age of the earth. So if there's an argument that challenges this idea that it's hard to get new proteins, that it's rather says that it's easy and nature can do it readily, that would be a severe criticism of our view of intelligent design.
So one example that evolutionary biologists use to say that it's easy to get new proteins is the story of nylonase. Can you tell me about that?
Okay, nylon first came into the environment in the late 1930s, and by the early 1980s, scientists had discovered that there was now a kind of bacterium capable of digesting nylon, breaking it down. So the idea was, apparently, there'd been the evolution of a whole new enzyme capable of degrading nylon in the course of 40 years, which would suggest that it's not hard to do. So, of course, they were interested in finding out more about this enzyme, and these were Japanese workers. They did a careful work to identify the enzymes responsible and then sequence the genes. And they found that there were three different enzymes that degraded nylon. But in particular, one gene called NILB had a fairly good activity in degrading nylon, and they discovered that there was another version of NILB on the same plasmid. They called it NILB prime. Then they went on to characterize the gene, and at this point, a famous Japanese scientist named Susumu Ono noticed something odd about the gene, namely that it appeared to have the capability of having two open reading frames. Now, perhaps I should stop and explain what I mean by that. So let me start by explaining how genes are read. They start with an ATG as a start signal. We call it a start codon. And if on the stretch of DNA there's an ATG, that's where the gene starts being read. Then at the end of a gene is a stop codon. It can be TAA, or TAG, or TGA. Now, you can read DNA in three frames because codons have three bases, and you can stagger the way you read them, but each frame specifies a different protein. Let me give you an example of what I mean by reading frame. So, think of the three words, each with three letters, the old man. We read it in English in one frame, the old man. If you shift the frame over by one, it would read T-H-E-O-L-D-M-A-N. So you've got different content there. And if that were translated into a protein, it would have a different sequence. And then likewise, the third frame, would be THEOLDMAN. That's yet another coding sequence, yet another protein. Now, in most genes, there's one gene specifying ATG and TAA, and it can go for 100, 500, 1,000, even further than that in terms of codons. But if you look at the other frames, they'll all have stop codons inserted. It just happens that, on average, DNA, unless it's a coding gene, will have stop codons every 50 bases or so. Now, what Ono noticed about nilinase at NileB was that there were two reading frames forward that didn't have stop codons in them. And so he speculated that there was one gene, the pre-existing gene, and then with a mutation, it inserted a start codon into a different frame, and then you got the new reading frame, the new protein, nilinase. So he was suggesting that there was a frame shift mutation, which completely changed the coding sequence of the DNA to a completely new protein with a function. So he was suggesting that it was not hard to get coding sequence with a function. Just shift the frame and you'll have a protein that folds and that can carry out some sort of activity. Now, you can see how that would go directly against our suggestion that it's hard to get new information that's functional, that it's really, really hard to get a new functional fold, a new functional enzyme, for example. So this argument is used against our claims to say that it's easy to get a new protein.
So was Ono correct?
Well, I should emphasize that Ono is a brilliant scientist and did a lot of really important evolutionary genetics work. And it was an interesting hypothesis that he put forward in his paper. It was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. But it was a hypothesis only. Yet it's been taken as fact by many evolutionary biologists, at least the ones that write on the web. But it turns out that there's more to the story, which doesn't get publicized, which is significant. The Japanese workers who've been working with NileB continued their study. They purified the protein and crystallized it, determined its structure, its three-dimensional fold, and discovered that the protein encoded by NileB had a fold structure similar to other known enzymes. Carboxyl esterases, they're called. And carboxyl esterases degrade a particular bond that's similar in structure to the nylon bond that nilinase degrades. So they thought, okay, nilinase looks like a carboxyl esterase. Let's see if it has carboxyl esterase activity. And lo and behold, it did. This is suggesting that nilinase was a pre-existing enzyme that had a different functional activity. It was involved in degrading carboxyl esters. So then, and it already had that function. So then they looked to see if they could say anything about how it would evolve the ability to degrade nylon. Well, remember I told you that there was a version of NileB, NileB prime, that was on the same plasmid? NileB and NileB prime differ by 47 amino acids. They did some mapping work and identified that to convert from carboxyl esterase to the ability to degrade nylon took only two amino acid changes. And each one was sufficient to convert to nilinase, and the second improved the nilinase activity. So Darwinian processes are capable of doing that if you have a stepwise path. One mutation makes a functional change, selectable change, then the second mutation improves it. That's a Darwinian stepwise path. That happens all the time. Happens with antibiotic resistance, for example. So the story now looks like nilinase was a pre-existing enzyme had a pre-existing activity. It was easy to convert it to the ability to degrade nylon. Stepwise path. Therefore, there's no reason to think that the enzyme is a newly derived enzyme from a frame shift. We don't need that explanation.
Is there anything else that's unusual about nylonase?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I told you that nylonase had two open reading frames going in the forward direction. Turns out it has a third open reading frame going in the reverse direction. So you have a very special sequence here. Most of the time, if you look at other frames that are in the same stretch of DNA as a coding sequence, as a gene, those other frames will have stop codons throughout. And it makes sense. If you want to have one function for one stretch of DNA, you have to prevent the expression of the other frames because it'll just produce junk most of the time. It would appear that nylonase has the potential to code for three different genes, three different proteins. Whether it does or not is unknown because, as far as I know, no one has looked at the alternate frames to see if they do in fact code for a protein and if they do in fact have a function. It is surprising that they might not have a function simply because a stretch of DNA that has no function tends to acquire mutations, tends to acquire stop mutations in particular. There's nothing to prevent stop mutations from occurring, and there's no purifying selection, as we call it. So the only thing that would say that these stretches of DNA, these alternate reading frames, might not have a function is they completely overlap the nylonase gene, but they have no start codons. So how are you going to get them expressed? Well, there are alternate start codons besides ATG, and I looked to see if the sequence in the region of these genes had alternate start codons, and they do. The start codon are a fair distance upstream for all three frames. They overlap completely, and they would potentially make even larger genes than the nylonase. Do they have any function? I don't know. NILB, the gene we've been talking about, doesn't resemble any other genes that are known except NILB, other NILB genes in other bacteria. One last piece of information. The NILB gene appears to be ancient. It's been around for a long time based on sequence comparisons with other genes in other species. So if it's been around for a long time, how is it that the other frames have not accumulated stop codons? It's a puzzle, kind of cool. It would suggest to me that any stretch of DNA that has no stop codons in three frames is a designed stretch of DNA, not a random one. Because to get that kind of sequence and maintain it, something's going on.
So does nylonase show that purely natural processes can create a new protein?
No. I would say, of course not, because we have an explanation for how it came about through just natural genetic modifications and selection from a starting protein, a starting enzyme, carboxylesterase. Stepwise path, there you go. But not a frame shift. Frame shift would create a completely novel sequence, a completely novel fold if it folded at all. And so we have no need of that hypothesis.
Well, thank you for joining us today on the show, Dr. Gager.
You're welcome.
This has been Sarah Chaffee for ID the Future. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.